to admit, it's been a very interesting week. A lot of news. For example, the Uganda anti-homosexuality bill actually got struck down in court due to procedural stuff, which to me is always that almost always seems like cheating. Oh yeah, you didn't sign on the dotted line. That means the law isn't real. You'll have bad luck for 7 years. You know, that sort of thing. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. This is going to be a very interesting episode today because part of the reason, because it's a little confusing, but not really. Because joining me in the studio is Becky. Hello, Becky. How are you?
I'm doing great.
And Becca. How you doing, Becca?
Wonderful.
It's going to be a fun episode today. And Dan's in the studio with us because he's got a moment to science in a bit.
Hello.
And so, what made this week really interesting was the first part of this week when, as you may have noticed, if you've been following the Ask an Atheist podcast feed, council member Jim McCune of Pierce County, his constituency is mostly the Mountain, recently had In God We Trust as a sign put up on the inner walls of the council room.
I think we haven't actually seen what the sign will look like. They haven't even decided on that. But the fact is, the Pierce County Council voted 4-3 to put a sign of some indeterminate size in God We Trust.
Yeah.
In the city, in the county council chambers.
You know what would make this really funny? If it ends up being like the size of a fortune cookie.
That would be amazing.
That would make my day. But we did get some feedback, or rather, I suppose I got some feedback, and we should probably answer it.
You did. So, Sam, you testified on both Monday and Tuesday, and someone...
I was all over the news.
You were. It
and
was
I didn't
fun.
Shave. It was horrible.
It was kind of fun. But someone listened to the testimony, and this was Christian from Calgary, Alberta, and he wrote in, "I am aghast at the level of discourse in that room at the Pierce County Council meeting. You," I think meaning Sam, "you provided the most cogent and rational speech among the bunch. I am particularly dismayed by, aside from your dominionist council person, that guy who said, 'We need more prayer in schools and we need the things we need.' Everyone who was boosting the God plaque was either a fool or a liar. Do you attribute the higher level of vocabulary and knowledge among non-believers in this case to demonstrate the correlation between education and non-belief? Or is it just a sample of the kinds of people who normally show up to testify at council meetings?"
Yes.
Yes and yes.
Council meetings, the first time I went to the council for the CEF thing, there was somebody there who was like a perennial guy who commented, and he always had something to say about abortion. And then one of the weird guys in this most recent thing, it turns out he got cracked in the head and has some brain wrong going on. You know, there is this. But let's not pretend ourselves. When you've closed your mind to science and you've decided that Christian mythology is going to rule your life, there's no reason to go replacing it with facts. So you're going to get a little bit of that too. But I like we need more of the things we need. I also agree that we need more of the things we need. We should also get more of the things that we want and perhaps avoid the things that we don't need that are things.
Vote for me this next election. I want all the things I want.
I am in agreement, Sam, that the things that we need are the things that we should be needing.
That was the biggest problem, is if you logically analyzed half of what was said, even to some extent by me, it came out to absolutely zero. You know what I mean? It's like, what? Okay, you just got up there and said some words. Have fun.
Oh, that's what public comment and public forum is at your local municipal meeting.
For me, it's sort of a professional thing. It's like, come on, you're going to go up, you're going to be on horrible cable access television. Put some artistry in it, man.
Yeah, at least be naked or covered in paint or something. I mean,
show up covered in butter with a Viking hat on.
Right.
Why not?
There were three sheriff deputies there.
Episode. Yeah.
There were three sheriff deputies.
Well, that's what the butter's for.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, no.
So, Sam, you got another feedback email.
Yeah.
This one, Mark from Westville, New Jersey, and he writes, "Hi, Sam. I just listened to the podcast titled McCune 2, Probable Plaque Plagues Pierce. And I must say the comments from most of the committee members were disgusting. However, I feel the comments you made could have been better. The part about God being a Christian God and that only Christians support this effort is good. However, you should have also said..." And this is Mark's quote.
Yeah, all right. Cue the dramatic music here, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
"I am an atheist,
And I fear that I will not receive a fair trial in this courtroom should a biased judge and jury discover the fact that I'm an atheist. The sign "In God We Trust," asserting a supernatural force, will only enforce a biased judge and the jury's decisions against me. It is the role of government to protect the minority from the masses. Because a majority of the United States population is Christian, it is that much more important that government remain secular to ensure people of all faiths or no faith are treated fairly. And then Mark continues, I feel it's okay to become a victim here. Any committee member still in support of that sign has only made a political choice and is not concerned with the well-being of the population.
See, now that's passion. Now that is a speech that I mean, like I said, cue the dramatic music, because that speech deserves it. That's the kind of stuff that makes me want to watch cable access. One problem, wasn't a courtroom.
Yeah.
It was a council room. Nobody's on trial there. They weren't judges. That would have made me look much like, well, the other side.
but points for your oratory, your rhetoric, Mark.
Yeah, yes. I was totally into it. I'm buying it as I'm listening.
I mean,
to it.
I was upset that I was out of town because I had ideas of what I might say, and I definitely was ready to go up and be emotional about it because it was an emotional thing. I literally cried in my hotel room thinking about this.
Yeah.
It bothered me that deeply.
When I get emotional, people call the cops. So I try to keep it on the...
You get mad. I just get sad.
There was one little surprise during the whole turn of events, and that was one of the council members who no one was really expecting to vote this down, actually did. And in his comment, he finally said, I don't need a sign on the wall telling me who I serve or reminding me who I serve and who I trust.
Well, I do want to talk about the victim thing, though. The Pierce County Council is a very conservative political body. And Jim McKeown is clearly a Dominionist, and he clearly has support of basically most of the people on that board, save for the people who represent me and people near me. I walked in the door knowing this was going to pass. This is going to come down on party lines. I thought it was going to be a straight party vote. I ended up being wrong, which turned out to be kind of a minor victory, I think.
Yeah, no, that's exciting.
But why was I doing this? Because there were a million people there saying, I've never heard of atheists complaining about this before. Well, you clearly aren't listening. I mean,
They also made comments about how they never receive personal emails from people who are upset about the pledge, like they could do anything about the pledge. If you're going to be emailing somebody, it's not going to be your city council member.
I don't email the dog catcher when I have a problem with Gaza.
Right.
You know? I mean, but the thing is, this was not about passing the law. This was about awareness raising. This is about making people pay attention, making people realize that In God We Trust is not as inclusive as they think, and the people who are pushing it have a clear Dominionist agenda. These people who are pushing this want us silent and gone.
And honestly, the thing that makes me so emotional is the lack of inclusion here, because it includes my son. Somebody who is being separated is my little baby. And like, whenever I think about the implications of what this could mean if it went further, is very painful for me.
If I talk about victimhood, I'm going to lose that fight. People are going to say, oh, this is just a guy who's overblowing it. I don't have kids. I represent a state, a state organization. I'm there for clearly political reasons. I'm clearly an activist. I'm not going to hide from that, because any deception on that level is going to be completely noticed. For example, speaking of deception, check out the Q13 coverage.
That's our local Fox affiliate that made Sam look to be like a big meanie head.
If I had a kid, I might have gone in that direction. But this was about the introduction of the idea of free thinkers and atheists and skeptics in rural Pierce County to people who didn't realize they were there. Because we had that open letter, and in that open letter were signatories from every constituency in Pierce County. Every member of that board had constituents who they need their vote, who were offended by what they did. That was why we did that. We fought that fight.
Atheists and believers alike, for that matter.
So, all right.
If they didn't know before, they certainly know now.
Let's put that to bed and do something interesting. Dan, tell us about cool things.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Today's moment of science is about an important misunderstanding regarding the way our world works. You might already be familiar with some of the harmful chemicals in your environment, like chlorofluorocarbons or polychlorinated biphenyls, but what about the rest of the chemicals in your environment? Is every chemical something to be feared? Can you really avoid chemicals? And if you could, would that be a better way to live? Let me start by describing one of the scarier sounding chemicals in our environment, dihydrogen monoxide, or DHMO. For those of you who are already familiar with DHMO, please hold your comments until the end. Dihydrogen monoxide is a chemical compound used in numerous industrial processes and poses serious human health risks. DHMO is used in large amounts by the petroleum industry, in the manufacture of processed foods, the manufacture of chemical propellants and fuels, and the manufacture of spray paints and coolant fluids. It's used in the treatment of sewage and in the biomedical industry. The solid form of the chemical is often used as a food preservative as well as for stabilizing human tissue samples, while liquid DHMO is often used as an agent to spread pesticides and fertilizers, and as much as 40% of the weight of a GMO corn kernel is actually dihydrogen monoxide. This small and polar molecule can easily pass through our cells' membranes and readily permeates all of our tissues, including the brain, heart, lungs, and genitals. Overexposure to DHMO can cause a feeling of bloatedness, temporary weight gain, wrinkling of the skin, nausea, excessive sweating, frequent urination, pulmonary edema, and in some cases, death. In fact, as little as 15 grams of dihydrogen monoxide has been known to kill a fully grown adult human. So what is this threat to our existence, this scourge of the natural world? Well, let's analyze the name and see what it really means. Dihydrogen monoxide. Di means two, and hydrogen is an element from the periodic table, the first one and the most common element in our universe. Mon or mono means one, and oxide refers to oxygen, another element, the eighth one on the periodic table, and the third most common element in the universe. So DHMO means two hydrogens, one oxygen. Another way of naming this chemical compound is H2O, or water. Yeah. Dihydrogen monoxide is just water, and everything I said about it above is true. However, if I'd just given you a common name to start with, it wouldn't have sounded scary, right? You'd already know that the benefits of water outweigh the risks, but that chemical name, that really gets people's hackles up. There seems to be an ideological divide between the ideas of chemical and natural, but that simply isn't true. DNA, the blueprint for life, the most natural thing imaginable to any living organism, also has a chemical name. DNA is short for deoxyribonucleic acid. In fact, every possible molecule has a chemical name. The more complex the molecule, the longer the name. What might be the longest word in the English language is the chemical name of a protein called titin. Titin is the largest known protein and is an important part of our muscle cells. It's also a support structure for the chromosomes that contain our DNA. Its chemical name is long, very long. Has over 189,000 letters and takes 3.5 hours to pronounce. And yet, without this chemical, we wouldn't be able to walk, to breathe, or to grasp a sign protesting DHMO. Sodium chloride sounds nasty, but it's just table salt, and sucrose is just white sugar. Everything has a chemical name because, as the comedian and musician Tim Minchin once emphatically shouted, everything is chemicals. Everything is chemicals! Everything is chemicals.
Ow.
You are made of chemicals, I am made of chemicals, and organic, GMO-free, fair trade, shade-grown, gluten-free quinoa is also made of chemicals. The only things that aren't chemicals are waveforms or fields like light and gravity. So the next time someone tries to swindle you out of your hard-earned cash by claiming their product is chemical-free, let them know that they're full of a mixture containing primarily hydrogen sulfide, cellulose, and decomposed hemoglobin. They're full of crap.
Fantastic. Did you know that they ordered, they sent a dihydrogen monoxide warning in Toledo last night?
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, you had to treat it before you could use it. Yeah, so, well, I love that one. I'm a member of a Facebook group called GMO Lol, which is, you know, people who basically...
As am I.
Yeah, Monsanto shills. And I love the images that have, you know, GMO strawberry contains these chemicals. Organic strawberry contains strawberry.
Mm-hmm.
Way to lie, kids!
Because organically grown non-GMO strawberry also contains same chemicals.
Pretty much. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Teresa McBain.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Dorn, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio Versus the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
It's less than 1 month until the Atheist Alliance of America 2014 National Convention comes to Seattle August 7th through 10th. Get ready for an awesome lineup, including Rebecca Goldstein, Steven Pinker, Richard Carrier, and Horace Gilgamesh. See and meet locals Rebecca Bitzman, Bob Seidensticker, and Sam Mulvey. Register for this family-friendly event, co-sponsored by Seattle Atheists, by visiting atheistallianceamerica.org. Discounted student rates available. That's atheistallianceamerica.org.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
So, a few people contributed to Peggy's challenge today, right?
A few.
A few, yeah.
A flock.
A flock. A grouping.
A gaggle? A murder?
I'm not comfortable with murder.
I mean, gaggle.
We get that a lot. If there is a plural noun for Ask an Atheist contributors...
A pedant.
I'm pretty sure I don't... I'm pretty sure I don't want to know what it is. A pedant. That's a group of us. That may be a group of Ask an Atheist hosts.
Okay.
But this week, I'd like to thank Fernando from Upland, California, James from Terre Haute, Indiana, Richard from the actual Kent in the UK, who says he's looking forward to seeing us at the Atheist Alliance of America convention later this week. Actually, yeah.
Wow. Woohoo.
That's a trip.
Will be fun to see you.
I saw him last year.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He was there.
And Movie Man from the internets. And hi.
Thanks, Movie Man.
Yeah.
Thanks for keeping the lights on at Ask an Atheist.
Yeah, is that a superhero deal or I don't know. Anyway, if you'd like to contribute to Ask an Atheist, you can contribute to Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge to the listeners to help keep the lights on here at Ask an Atheist. And if you'd like to participate, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It takes you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give goes directly to show production.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists, with a rational worldview, informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
720-0997. We're really excited to be talking to Teresa McBain shortly, but we did want to say that on Moment of Science, if you have a scientific question or topic that you'd like to hear Dan talk about on the radio or on the podcast, you can phone in at 206-420-0997 or go to askanatheist.tv and click the shiny red candy like button to email in your question about science.
This isn't to say that Dan is running out of ideas, but man, he likes requests, and I know what that's like, so... yeah, he would definitely email him. You know, we got some emails. We should probably cover them, but this is an action-packed episode, so we're gonna move right on. So joining us now is Teresa McBain. We talked with Teresa McBain in April of 2012, 1 week after outing herself as a non-believer at the American Atheist National Convention. She is a former Methodist minister, an alum of the Clergy Project, and not an alum of Duke University. Welcome back to the show, Teresa.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on.
Really great having you back on. So you spent a year and a half as the darling of the Freethought community, followed by very little contact or visibility for nearly another year. What's been going on?
Yeah, I guess probably about 8 months of just dropping off the radar for a while. And, you know, it all had to do with the issue that came up at Harvard, which you just alluded to. No, yeah. I'm not an alumni of Duke. I attended there, but I didn't graduate. And so when all that came out in the public eye, it devastated me, honestly, and I backed out of the public view, one, for my own self. I'd be lying if I didn't say it didn't impact me personally and I didn't have a pity party for a while.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was just so ashamed of myself. I couldn't bring myself to be online or Facebook. You know, people would see me before I deactivated my account, and they would send me a message and say, hey, how are you doing? We're concerned. We still love you. And, you know, every one of those things was, to me, a knife in my heart, because I'm thinking, oh, how can you say that? You know what I did. So it was a coping mechanism, a self-preservation kind of thing, I guess. I mean, one of those crazy ways that I just had to have... a little time, you know, I saw a therapist to try and deal with me, to get me in the right place before I could step back up and be around, you know, all my friends and,
I think it's important to talk about, but, I kind of want to rip the Band-Aid off and sort of get to now. For those of you not in the know, Teresa went to Duke, but that ended up being turned into a degree, and she backed that up. And then in the process of receiving attention as one of the first members of the Clergy Project to come out publicly, fact-finding determined that she didn't actually have that degree. She immediately said so, lost the job over it, and that leads to a question.
Yes. Hi, Teresa. It's Rebecca Witzman.
Hey.
You know,
hey, Rebecca.
When everything happened to you, I felt such a connection to you. In a way, I don't feel like other people can understand what it's like to suddenly find yourself at square one in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, while some people, you know, they start over, it's a conscious choice. They decide to start over. They say, now I'm going to start over, and they move with it. But I feel like you, in a way, understand what it's like to just have the carpet and the safety net just ripped out from under your feet. And for me, over the last year, I had to redefine myself and just find a new place to be in the world. And I feel as though you must have gone through the same thing, especially with your therapy. I was in therapy as well, in trying to find that new place. And I was wondering if you could talk for just a moment about if you found that new place or which, you know, what's the new path?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. One thing that I have found and that has evolved through this time is that I've always pushed my whole life. I've been one of those A-type personalities, driven, push, 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 push. And so all this learning that I've done about myself over the last 9 months, I see how that's kind of tied into some things that, some false things I grew up believing about myself. So, you know, I'm not completely there. I still find myself pushing and working too hard, but I'm not so tied into it in order to make you like me. Because I've always been a huge people pleaser. A lot of pastors are. I mean, yeah. You know, and other people as well. I was a pastor, so I know very well that that's something that we go through. But that really played into how things played out for me. Instead of, you know, I've talked about even when, you know, when I made the confession online, as soon as it was out, I immediately came online and I just spilled my guts and said, you know, I did this. I'm so sorry. please forgive me. I know I let you down, yada, 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 yada. So from that point, you have to kind of dig back and say, well, why did you have to wait for it to come out like that? Why didn't you just step up and own up to it before that? And the thing that I've discovered about myself in therapy, especially when I really, really got down to it and was honest, was that it was that fear that people wouldn't like me. And, you know, some people may say, oh, that's just a cop-out. Well, you know, for each person, it's kind of different. And when you derive a lot of your self-worth based upon what other people think about you, it makes sense at that point. So, and there's a lot of other stuff that goes with it that I won't get into and, you know, bore all the listeners to death. But
so,
that's kind of a journey, and it's a new place for me to where, because all this happened, you know, the silver lining is that I actually took time. I didn't have anything else to do. And was so far down that I was honest for myself to say, you know what, you really need to see somebody. And when I decided that was the right thing to do, I had to say to myself, you know what, you really need to do what he's saying and ask yourself really tough questions that I'd ignored or didn't even realize were there. So the silver lining is that because of this huge, epic fail, I actually am a stronger person, if that makes any sense at all.
I think it absolutely does. I think that it's a really important message for anyone that's going through a lot of challenge to say you can, you know, you don't have to counter those personal challenges alone. Like, help through therapy. One thing I wanted to go back a little bit was you talked about fear of letting down. And something mm-hmm. that I was observing in sort of how your story was unfolding is that initially, when you were a minister, when you were a Methodist minister, you were very scared to reveal your atheism because it would have let yeah. down your congregation, and it would have put mm-hmm. your family in financial jeopardy, but you took that dive anyway. The free thought community yeah. totally embraced you, welcomed you, and after mm-hmm. finding a home with Harvard Humanists, you again faced putting your family in financial danger and letting people again through a different kind of lie, if you will. But mm-hmm. how do you then, you know, reconcile that, and do you view the free thought community any differently now after that experience?
You know, it's interesting that I don't view the free thought community any differently. My fear when I was coming out and the way that I would be received and the negative responses were all justified. It all happened. And it wasn't planned for me to go to AA and come out. Had it been planned, I don't, you know, I hope I would have done it, but I think probably my little tendency to stay in my head too much would have talked me out of it. Just because it wasn't planned, I could get up there in the company of friends and like-minded people and do it. So taking that leap, I received exactly what I was afraid of and exactly what I thought would happen, you know, all the negativity. What happened at Harvard doesn't cause me to view the free thought community any differently because, you know, there were a few that were on my comments or sent messages or whatever that were disappointed. Of course, none of them sent me death threats or anything. But overall, by a huge majority, the free thought community has been right there every step of the way. Even, you know, when I went into hiding to just try and be quiet and deal with me, as soon as I'm back online, everybody's like, oh, we missed you so much. We were so worried about you. How are you doing? How are you dealing with this? It's, you know, it's truly a family atmosphere. It's truly a chosen family atmosphere. And, you know,
yeah.
I appreciate it. And I can't say that I expected any differently. Honestly, I can't say what I expected because it was just like, oh my God, you know.
Right. I'll make no bones about you know, about how I feel about this. I really like your work. I you know, like everybody else, I was disappointed, but I thought you could still be a member of the community. And frankly, I think one of the most important moments of Ask an Atheist we've ever done was that interview in 2012. I know by far, just because of what was happening in the background, that was one of the more difficult interviews I had to do, but it was incredibly mm-hmm. meaningful to me. It was one of those moments that I said, "Okay, here's why I do the show. This is what I'm for." And I'm deaf. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a radio show host. I know exactly what you mean by pleasing people and wanting to please people and stuff like that. But.
Yeah.
So all that went down and you kind of disappeared for a while. I was sad, but now you're back and you're talking again. What made you decide to come back?
It was probably around the time the American Atheist Convention. I know it was. It was about a week before the convention was to happen in Salt Lake City. You know, I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to give a talk. Dave continued to try and convince me to come. I'm like, no, I can't do it. Because, again, I couldn't face all of you guys. I just couldn't imagine how to look you in the eye, knowing what you know and knowing what I know. I just couldn't do it. So I woke up a week before that and realized that the convention was coming up that following weekend. I think it was actually a Monday, and the convention was coming up on the weekend. And I just sat up in bed, and was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You should be there. You should go. You know, why are you letting this thing beat you down? Is this going to be what defines you? And, of course, this little discussion in my head, I responded, no. I don't know how or why or any of those things, but I know that I can't let it end this way and that this can't be what I'm known for. And so I guess from somewhere deep down inside, there was something of me that was similar to when I stepped out on stage at the 2012 convention and came out publicly. And I got up, I reactivated my Facebook account, and, all these messages, and, just went from there.
I think what you started to see there is the thing that we all see, and why you have so many people who love you so much, because beyond what you decided to write on a resume, all of this work that you did isn't undone. And there are so many people who are so grateful to you. And I'm so glad that you got to a point within yourself where you could say, no, I give so much and I want to continue to give, because the atheist community just loves you. So many of us do. And so I'm wondering, so what now that you've come back, what do you see yourself doing? What's the direction? What are the plan? What's the plan that you have?
Well, at the moment, I'm going to do a little bit of just volunteer work with the clergy project. They've, I've always been a part of the project, and I'm just going to help out a little bit with the things that I know how to do pretty well, which is, communications and PR and such. I've got people who've contacted me about coming to speak to their groups. So I'm trying to group those together, kind of like Jerry DeWitt does, He's like the classic example. Just have little mini tours so that groups can share travel expense, and I can just go out and speak to groups, which is what I love to do the most. Some people who I had been speaking with before that were developing community have contacted me and asked me to give them, tips, advice, whatever. A couple of others have said, hey, we took the advice you gave us previously and look what has happened from it. I don't know exactly how that'll fit in, except, if somebody emails me, I'll definitely talk to them about it. And, I have a conference coming up, two of them, actually. One
we
I
actually
can tell
have,
you about. The other.
Hang on one sec, because we actually have somebody on the phone who would like to talk to you about that. So why don't we go ahead and bring them in now.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Thomas in St. Louis. Are you there, Thomas? Oh boy!
Uh-oh.
We'll try and get Thomas on the line. Yeah.
Oh, Thomas, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Hey. So you've got some news for us, or you want to talk to Teresa?
Hey, Teresa. I really appreciate hearing you on the radio and in person again. I remember the first time we met down in Tulsa. That was a really nice time. So that I think it was your first convention after you came out at the American Atheist.
So.
Yeah,
so the free okay, uh-huh.
Yeah, that, we had a pretty long discussion there, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. I did find out through searching on the internet that my daughter's getting married next week, so life goes on. But in view of that, I remember, I guess when you just came back out as... on Facebook, I contacted you almost immediately and said, "Hey, good to see you again." And so I was one of those that definitely was real supportive of you, and cursed the New York Times for their good journalism or whoever. So
but we've got some more recent news right now. There's a conference coming up in St. Louis, correct?
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I'm helping organize that. And Teresa, you've committed to that. That will be next. It's actually a year from today. It's called Gateway mm-hmm. to Reason, and I have speakers like David Fitzgerald, Aaron Ra, Sam Singleton, Fazal Muttar, of course Teresa, and just you know, there are going to be about 20 people speaking all together. The price for the 3-day event is just $25, and you can get your tickets now at gatewaytoreason.eventbrite.com, and we're looking forward to having a wonderful turnout. And of course, Rebecca, are you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, do you remember me? I went down to Moore from St. Louis to help out with the recovery before the free okay there.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah, and are you still committed to coming to this?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so there's another one.
All right, Tom.
Yeah, and also I'm looking at having like comedians and scientists and philosophers, you know, all sorts of different type of speakers. So there's a wide variety for everyone to enjoy. Basically, you have to nail down the commitments and stuff. But
Thomas, we're coming up on the break, Thomas. So thank you very much for calling in.
And that's Gateway to Reason.
Gateway to Reason. We'll include a link in the show notes. And St. Louis, we stopped there on our tour, and St. Louis is a really fun town to be in. Thanks for your call, Thomas.
Sure.
All right. Teresa, we're going to go into a break. Would you be willing to stick with us?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Fantastic. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Teresa McBain.
It's less than 1 month until the Atheist Alliance of America 2014 National Convention comes to Seattle August 7th through 10th. Get ready for an awesome lineup, including Rebecca Goldstein, Steven Pinker, Richard Carrier, and Horace Gilgamesh. See and meet locals Rebecca Bitzman, Bob Seidensticker, and Sam Mulvey. Register for this family-friendly event, co-sponsored by Seattle Atheists, by visiting atheistallianceamerica.org. Discounted student rates available. That's atheistallianceamerica.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at SeattleAtheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. And we're continuing our conversation with Teresa McBain. Becky, you've got a question.
Yeah, Teresa, I was wondering, I'm a native of Boston. You are not. You spent some time in both New Jersey and Boston, and then you ended up going back to your birth state of Alabama. You risk being really rejected by, you know, because of your atheism and because of that sort of Northern Yankee influence. How has that actually turned out?
Oh, wow. I mean, that was really, really hard. We had no choice. I mean, we had to go somewhere with my husband retiring so we could go to Boston. And, you know, he gets a retirement check, which is not great. It's enough. I mean, he's a cop. He was a cop. So, and then, of course, I had no job. So we came back here. My two sisters still live here. And, oh, my goodness, it has been really, really hard. And, you know, I think part of that was the rejection of or the withdrawal for me from the community. It was such a glaring reminder every time I woke up and every time I stepped out the door. Initially, we stayed in my sister's fifth wheel camper. And I can remember those first, maybe the first month, 3 weeks, a month, I would wake up in the morning and not realize that any of this stuff had happened, but then quickly I would realize it and it would just be like, there it is all in front of me again. And so, you know, the reminder, the having to not necessarily be quiet because, you know, I don't know anybody here anymore. Everybody's gone on and done their thing, but, you know, there are no free thinkers, no free thinking groups in the county. I think there are some folks. I haven't met them yet, but, you know, Baptist church is on every corner. There's probably four within a mile of us. you know, even just culture. We're living out in the country now, which is fine. It's nice and quiet, and I actually like that. But in Jersey and in Boston, you know, you walk out the door and you've got every kind of food you want, every kind of people, and pretty much where we live is white Southern.
I think one of the really important things that sort of come out as people write in or call in to Ask an Atheist is that even as rural and as disconnected as you think you are, there are more free thinkers than one might assume. So I think you might have some folks coming out of the woodwork in at least nearby in Birmingham itself, if not out in the county.
I know I actually personally have friends who are atheists and live in Birmingham.
Oh, right on.
All right. Hey, send them my way.
Send them your way.
So, yeah. We answer emails on the show, Teresa, and we got this really interesting one, and we read this in pre-show, like right before we went on the air, and we thought this would be the perfect one for you to field. You know, I've always been sort of outside of religion, and even when I had a connection to religion, it was not Christian. So, this is, would you mind answering it for us?
Oh, no, go ahead.
All right, this is Corey from the internet, and they write, I consider myself a Christian raised in a Christian household. Lately, I've been having doubt, so I'm trying to honestly seek the truth. My doubt is stemming from some Bible verses that I have read that seem quite immoral. This doubt confuses me and causes me to question everything, but my religion has always been so close to my heart. As an atheist, what would you say to a man in my position? If God isn't real, then why do I feel so incomplete without him? Why do I feel so much guilt?
Well, you know, that's a big question, and parts of it I can't answer because I don't know the neurobiology, the neuropsychology that is within us. I've read a little bit about it, some research and some studies that have been done that show possibly why it is that humans desire some type of supernatural being, a divine being, basically coming from way back evolutionary down the evolutionary chain. Sorry, I can't talk today. But for me, I think the answer I would give, strictly from like a spiritual perspective as a former minister, would be that it's programmed into us to a certain degree, and it was to me. There wasn't another life that I knew of for years besides the life that was in church, and church is tied with this belief in a divine being. Secondly, believing in that a God, regardless of which religion it is you're a part of, it offers some comforts to you. I mean, you know, when you're very troubled, you can pray and you believe or you feel like that there's this person somewhere or being somewhere out there that's listening to you and actually wants to step in on your behalf and help you. You know, there's comfort in the fact that after you die, that you know that there's something better that you can exchange this terrible, difficult life for. So all those things are really tied to us deep, deep down because, you know, we all feel like at times that there are times when we really need to be comforted, but it's things that we can't find somebody to talk about. You know, like when I was struggling with, as a pastor, struggling with my unbelief, and who do I talk to about it? Even what we were talking about earlier, you know, with I have this terrible secret, but how in the world am I going to say something? You know, I need somebody to comfort me, but there's, you know, the truth was there is somebody there, but I just
but it's not God. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
You know, and for me, a problem that I had, and I actually remember crying and crying and crying in high school because I was so upset at the idea that maybe I wasn't good. There's so much reinforcement, positive and negative, connected to religion that makes you really view yourself as good whenever you're doing something related to church and bad if you're not. And so as somebody who defined themselves as a good person, any time that I felt doubt, I was terrified of it. And I feel like, you know, the incomplete feeling that you have is understanding that you can be good, understanding that you haven't really changed who you are as a human being. You know, that's the problem that I would always run into whenever I was dealing with that, when I was, you know, converting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you touched on it just a bit. Who we are is tied up in that. Our identity is in that, the way, you know, our religion, our relationship with God, our relationship with Jesus or Muhammad or whomever it may be. So when you strip all that away and you come to the conclusion, or you're struggling with the conclusion that those things are not real, it is really terrifying. You know, I remember fighting with myself, just horrified that I was even having those kinds of thoughts, and deep down thinking, you know, well, this is who I am. Without this, who am I? You know, what am I? So I think all of these little things, plus hundreds of others that I can't even think of or don't know, because they apply to different people in different ways, I think they all work together kind of in concert with each other to cause that emotional desires and things inside. And, you know, there are certain parts about church emotionally, the emotional ties, that I haven't lost. Music being one of them, which I've talked about this a lot.
I think
some of the old hymns and even the contemporary music, because we had a band. I can still get my guitar down, play the guitar, and sing those songs. And yes, I do that occasionally, because there is an emotional, sentimental connection to it.
I've heard you speak about your connection to the liturgical music and the worship music. And I think, you know, in your case, and certainly in my case too, I came out of something where we had a lot of musical involvement. You know, you sometimes feel complete without that music, or you feel incomplete without community gathering for Bible study, but not necessarily feeling incomplete without God. And to be able to recognize that feeling of loss or that feeling of incompleteness isn't about you've given up God, because you understand that God isn't real or isn't real for you. And so what is it that you're feeling incomplete about? In your case, music, you know, in someone else's case, maybe the weekly gathering together and, you know, noshing over bagels. And so, you know, I would say for Corey, the sense of self, certainly that identity that you were referring to, for Corey to say, hey, what is it that you actually are feeling incomplete about?
Well, exactly. You know, yeah, just dig down and say exactly what you just said. I mean, the community is a big thing for people that is found within church and religious groups. And that's why there is such a desire, kind of a grassroots desire, that's spoken of within the atheist and humanist community, wanting these types of connective gatherings, which, you know, before all this happened, That was, and it actually still is a passion of mine.
Well,
being a former pastor, yeah. I know how to do it. You know?
It's definitely a passion of mine, and I'm looking forward to... I think we need to build that sense of community and the ability for atheists to connect, and I think we definitely need to build that. We're working on that here in Seattle, and I actually look forward to working with you on building that.
Yeah, yeah. We had a conversation about this before.
We did.
I was on a conference call with you guys. Yeah,
yeah.
I remember that very well.
And we may now that you're back on the streets, we may pick that up. Teresa McBain, thank you very much for talking with us today. It's really nice to hear your voice again, and we'll talk again soon.
Oh, thank you, guys. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I have changed my mind over the course of this episode. I was originally going to say that one of the problems I have with the atheism community is we seem to be very bad at forgiveness. Today, that's not what I'm feeling. I'm going to have to revisit that, I think. Where are you on that, Becky?
I'm kind of in a similar place as well. And hearing Teresa reflect and say every time she had any myriad number of little contacts saying, we love you, are you okay? How it felt very painful made me sort of rethink how that outreach can actually be painful depending on where someone is in their journey.
Yeah.
And I was ready to ask about, hey, why do you think that so many atheists felt hurt or betrayed by your choice not to clarify your educational background? But the majority of what she got wasn't that.
Yeah.
I mean, that may have been talked about between atheists or between freethinkers, but that wasn't what she got.
And it's funny because I've always kind of wondered, as somebody who has followed her on Facebook, I've always seen such positive things written, and I've always wondered what kind of private things she was experiencing.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to hear that it was so positive. But it's so sad to hear that how much it hurt her.
When in religious communities, forgiveness is perfunctory, it's mechanical, it's based in a dogma. It's a process, it's an algorithm. Everybody runs this little forgiveness program in their heads when they decide when somebody does something wrong. We don't do that in this community. We eschew dogma. And what I was worried about is that just meant because we didn't have the programming for forgiveness, it didn't seem to be taking place. Am I saying that Teresa did not screw up, that Teresa did not commit a lie? No. But if I wanted somebody to apologize, it would look like that. The minute she was called on it, everything, you know, she came clean immediately. No doubling down, no excuses, no saying, well, I really have a degree, but I don't really have a degree. No, she says, okay, I attended classes there and I don't have a degree. Okay, that's over. I kind of want to move on from that. I
was with you, Sam, that it's sort of hard to think about what does forgiveness look like to atheists?
Yeah.
Because at least from a Jewish perspective, we got one big old day a year where everyone is forced to apologize for even sins they didn't commit.
Is this a source of Festivus?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
No, it is. It's sort of the grief. Yeah. But everyone is forced to admit to sins that they didn't commit, to give that collective thing, and then everyone is obligated to forgive everyone. It is a very perfunctory thing. Some people do find it meaningful and powerful, and sometimes that bleeds over into your atheist or humanist self, if that's the kind of structure you grew up with.
And the thing that I usually see whenever I see atheists experiencing forgiveness, whenever I watch other people do it, it's deeply seated in empathy, and I feel like that is something that people can really do with this story. They look at her and they say, oh my gosh, what would it be like to be her? And
yeah.
I feel like that is the atheist forgiveness experience.
One thing that worried me is the education aspect. Like last time we talked about this, I said, is it that she lied or is that she doesn't have a degree? I don't think it's because it has a degree. I think there's sort of a degree thing in the atheism community that I kind of want to talk about at some point because help me run my life, Ask an Atheist listeners. I'm thinking about going back to school. But my problem is, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to dump 50 large on a degree or something like that, and you know what I'm going to do with that degree? Come back in this room and keep talking. And I kind of wonder, am I doing this for me, or am I doing this because I feel I need the acceptance of a community that values education? And I sort of wonder about that sometimes. And I'm beginning to understand that this is really separate from the from the Teresa thing that happened last year, but I still wonder about it. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Becky Friedman, Rebecca Witzman, and Dan Lombardo. My guest was Teresa McBain. My technical assistants were Sharon Sonowski and Bridget Lombardo. Writing was Dave Brulette and Becky Friedman. I am still the producer, last I checked. Our voicemail is 206-420-0997. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv, or you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week.